Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thung Athletes, and welcome to the 2080 Thrillcast. I am your ever-present host, Malk Char. Thank you for bearing with us over the last 4 weeks as we have moved office. We're not quite in there yet, but fingers crossed over the next couple of weeks that may well happen. But we're back onto our regular schedule of 2080 Thrillcast episodes. Me and a few of the other droids are getting ready for San Diego this week. Another trip across the Atlantic, you know, being packed into a large canister and fired over the other side of the world, hoping for a soft landing. In advance, I apologise for the malfunction of my vocal protocols, a bit of malware ahead of the show. Best get it out of the way. But we're looking forward to having a fantastic time in San Diego with guests such as Ian Colbard, Tula Lote, Anna Morozova, who is one of our newest droids, did her future truck a little while ago. And yeah, some great panels, some great guests. Going to have plenty of time. And we'll be hoping to bring as much of the flavour of the greatest show on Earth to you, our listeners, as we possibly can. In the meantime, out this week is Judge Dredd magazine number 410 with a brand new series of DeMarco PI from Laura Bailey and Paul Williams. Now, as long-time readers will know, Galen DeMarco was a former judge who was introduced during the Pitt storyline back in the late 90s. She went on to develop a bit of an infatuation with Judge Dredd and ended up walking away from being a judge. She became a private investigator, and over the last few years there's been numerous series by Michael Carroll and Steve Yoel charting her adventures on the mean streets of Mega City 1. But now it's Laura and Paul's time to give her a new case to solve. So that begins this week in the magazine. So with a new series starting in the magazine, it seems the perfect time to get Laura and Paul onto the podcast again. So welcome to the both of you.
Hi.
Hi.
So, like I said, you've both been guests on the podcast before, and I seem to recall at the Thought Bubble panel last year, we chatted a little bit about the new DeMarco series. But now that it's going to see print this week, I wanted to really kind of dive down into it, especially as for both of you, it's your first multi-part story for the House of Tharg. So, Laura, tell me a little bit about how this came about, because obviously you're both alumni of the 2080 Thought Bubble New Talent competitions.
Yeah. It was probably around this time last year, actually, I was pitching, and I just, obviously I had a Galen story in the sci-fi special, and I was itching to do some more, and I asked Mal, or Tharg, if he'd be interested in another story, and he said, yeah, I'd be looking for a three-part one. I was like, oh my God. And so I came up with a story, pitched it, and I told Paul, oh, you know, good luck with that, well done, or whatever. And then a couple months later, while I was out of work, I got a message from Paul being like, they've asked me to do the Galen story, to draw it. And I went absolutely psycho. So, yeah, it was really exciting, basically.
So, Laura, without any spoilers, tell us a little bit about what this new story is.
Okay, well, story is Galen's been hired by a man called Charlie to find out where his mum is walking off to. He's worried that she's going insane. She's getting voices of the dead speaking to her. He thinks she's putting on the voices. So he's just trying to get a handle on the situation. And that's the start of the story, basically. That's part one without spoiling the end. So, yeah.
And Is there, I mean, like I said, you've already done one Galen DeMarco story last year. Are you particularly drawn to her as a character?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm. Because, I mean, I really love the fact that she fancied Judge Dredd. That, to me, was great. I just thought... And his shocked face, like that very slightly shocked mouth, like curled up slightly when she kisses him or whatever. I just, it's kind of obsessed with that. And I was not usually into kind of romance. I think it's because it's just like, I just can't believe she even bothered to go there, really. It's just, what were you thinking? And that's why I like her. And that's my, how I'm interested in writing in her, that she's not getting everything perfect, or she's, you know, she's capable, but she gets things wrong, and that's what I like. It's much more relatable for me. So obviously she works as a PI and I've got some experience in that, so it's a good outlet to kind of talk about some of the things that I've seen happen or what have you. So it's just multiple things. But I'd be also happy writing just a Judge Dredd and Galen romance story.
I mean, that'd be a hell of a Elseworld special, really, wouldn't it?
I would die for that story, to have them go out on like a lobster date or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I did.
It's the bill.
It's always that thing about, you know, the great unrequitable loves in comics history, and this has to be one of them. Like, as you say, what on earth were you thinking?
Yeah, she must have. I mean, if it's anything like my friends who have been in these kind of situations, she just, in my opinion, probably completely projected a whole thing onto, oh, he must be thinking this, he must be thinking that. And it's like, no, Judge Dredd is just thinking about the law, you know, basically. He's just thinking about crime. He's not mysterious. He's actually quite straightforward in a way. But yeah, so I really like that story. And that was a part of the appeal. Those are my favourite Galen stories, is her copping off with other judges and what have you.
Michael Carroll had a fairly extensive run in the magazine on DeMarco. Is that something you've looked to follow on from, or is this kind of your own version of the character?
I would see it as going more back to her being a judge, that kind of Galen, being a bit more of a screw up, and I would say it's kind of resetting. It's not because there's anything wrong with any way which anyone's done it before, but it's just my take on it, my take on her character. I describe her as kind of just capable, but getting things wrong, basically, you know, not being perfect. And I'm also wanted to kind of, because Private Investigation is quite murky, and I wanted her to be not so kind of like squeaky clean. Obviously that's hard, because doing anything wrong in Mega City 1 is a crime. So there is a line, but just to make it all a bit more murky, you know, what line she's prepared to cross. And I wanted her to, the thing is, as well, is that the people who kind of employ you, usually they're either kind of crazy or it's people who are like criminals. So it, being a private investigator, it's not really for the greater good, or I think you're just kind of, well, yeah, you're answering to whoever's paying your bill. So I was kind of, those were my thoughts when doing this Galen story. It was thinking about her screwing up, getting with the judges, and it was thinking about her needing to be just slightly more scumbaggy, just slightly, as much as you can get away with. But, yeah.
Mega City 1 seems like the perfect kind of place for PI stories? Because of course, we've had DeMarco. There's also the Simping Detective, and you know, there's been one or two kind of undercover judges stories around low life and whatnot that kind of fit perfectly into that. Is it the case of your kind of sport for choice of the tropes and the ideas that you can project onto Mega City One?
I think the thing that's difficult is really making sure that she doesn't break the law. I think that's the thing that I've always found hardest, because so many things are a crime, and often private investigation can kind of border into being illegal. So it's just really, for me, it was trying to find, I don't know, the grey in that. Also, not making anything too cliche. I didn't want anybody I work with to read it and be like cringing at me for doing something too stereotypical. Like, most of the time, private investigation is just like constantly messing up and covering your ass and just making the best of it and, you know, trying to get paid. So I wanted it to feel like part of, you know, traditional Mega City One stories, but also true to kind of how mundane or ridiculous the job can be, I guess. I didn't want her to be like in control of everything. It's kind of flying on your feet was the vibe I was going for.
Let's turn to Paul, because there's a kind of angle here that I think it's important to talk to the artist on the strip about. Along with Michael Carroll, there was the artwork by Steve Yowell on the previous run on the magazine. First question, have you sort of been looking to channel a little bit of Steve's work in what you've been doing? Have you been concentrating on your own version? And second question, have you been looking to reflect the stuff that Laura's been talking about in your strip? You know, that kind of slightly murky kind of seat of your pants world.
Well, not really in terms of trying to continue on from what Steve Yowell was doing. I think that there's, you know, a nice, well, I suppose it's not a coincidence because Matt chose me to draw the strip, but we kind of have, there's a bit of a through line in our artwork anyway. Like, I've seen one review of the strip already, and there was a comparison to Steve Yowell's artwork made in the, you know, the way my storytelling happens. So I think that there's a kind of natural fit almost without it being too similar. I certainly was looking back at the kind of DeMarco that we saw in the 90s when she was a judge, like the storyline Laura was talking about. I've actually got a copy of that prog right next to me right now, the Cop This cover where she's kind of getting off with Dredd, because this was around the time I started reading the prog. So when I kind of think of what makes up the fabric of Judge Dredd's world, DeMarco is very much tied into that. So, you know, I was just as overjoyed as Laura was really to get put on the strip. In terms of trying to get across what Laura talked about, we've actually, you know, we've communicated quite a lot in the process of making it. So I've been running ideas by her, and, you know, she's been commenting, you could do this, to more get across what I want to say if I happen to mess up, which we didn't really have any major conflicts throughout it, luckily. But yeah, you know, that everything she was saying about DeMarco kind of not being a perfect PI and screwing up and stuff, that side of the story kind of really drew me to it, because I think at the end of the day, most of us really can relate to kind of just doing the best we can in our jobs and covering up for our mistakes. Well, there's no mistakes in this, obviously. This is, you know, just great. But but yeah, it was a real thrill to get put on a strip that kind of took me back to my early days of reading the prog. Yeah, for sure.
And for you, and I'll ask this question to Laura as well, but for you, what's it been like working on this first multi-part story?
Well, I mean, my kind of experience of this is always going to be in the context of it being my first professional comics deadline, because coming out of a thought bubble competition, you kind of assume that everybody who enters it has a 9-to-5. So FAR gives you, I think I had like a month per page or something ridiculous, just so that people are able to do it outside of their regular jobs, Whereas with this, even though it didn't come out for quite a long time, Matt did give me what I presume would be a pretty regular deadline for it. And obviously, when you work in, when you're producing that amount of work in such a small amount of time, the obvious thing that's going to happen is you're going to get better, pretty much no matter what stage of your career you're at. And that is kind of a misconception that a lot of people, or I did anyway, had when I first started drawing. Like, because I went on an illustration course back in like 2010, I think it was, and I had this stupid idea that I would come out the other side of it, the complete artist, you know, like that was it, I'd be done, like a finished product. And so, yeah, I knew going into this, right, I've got the page amount. I don't know why anyone would be worried about page amount spoilers, but I'll be vague anyway. And if I'd be drawing loads and loads of pages within a couple of months, and the thing I was worried about was I didn't want the last pages to look substantially better than the first ones, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted there to be an artistic consistency. So I kind of looked at the thing as a whole and tried to figure out what I could do to ensure that there is that consistency within the artwork. And I think, you know, there are some aspects in which you can see an improvement. Like, I think my composition gets a bit better by the end, but overall, if you take the last few pages and the first few pages, it doesn't look like they were drawn by two different artists, or, you know, without much of a gap between them. So I'm quite happy with it, how it turned out artistically, which is also a good thing, because as any artist will tell you, you know, if you look back at the work you did 7 or 8 months ago, most of the time you hate it. So when me and Laura were kind of, because we'd, you know, obviously with this being some of our first professional comics work, we've both been staggeringly impatient for it to come out, and we'd kind of knock our heads together and try and figure out when it will be. And I kept telling her, I think it's going to be July, you know, I think it's going to be July. And so we were both kind of like really dreading that we would hate it when it come out. But I think we're both pretty happy with it, aren't we, Laura?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm really excited for it to come out. I don't feel too nervous, actually, which is a first. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is very interesting to me, is the kind of mental process you go through as new creators, because you both came to work for 2000 AD in the same way, you know, a competition that we held. And one thing that always strikes us is the number of people involved in the competitions who, you know, those who don't win, those who do win, we sort of say, you know, this is just the beginning of this process. You know, you've surmounted one peak, and there are more, you know, there are many more higher ones to come. But it's kind of incumbent on people to be proactive. I wanted to find out how you've both found that process of actually, oh, you know, I've achieved this. I need to keep pushing. You know, this isn't kind of like the fields of heaven open to me. This is, you know, the beginning of a journey, as it were.
Yeah, well, that was definitely what I felt like most of last year after the debut, because, I mean, you only have to pick up the prog for a couple of months in a row to see how many fantastic creators there are in the book. So you kind of always know that if you just get your foot in the door, then you're going to be fighting for the scraps at the bottom of the pile, pretty much. So, you know, the one thing I didn't want to do was just sit back and just hope that Matt would send me another commission through. So my personal approach to it, although actually, because I should say, before I entered the competition, I did work as an educational illustrator for about 7 years. Nothing half as exciting as comics. Like, I was doing the illustrations that you get in workbooks at schools that, you know, when kids look at the pictures and they have to identify which way the red car's facing, and just really uninspiring stuff like that. So I had a little bit of experience with self-promotion. And so my take basically was to post my art in as many places as I could in the lead up to our Future Shock coming out, and kind of get a commissions list going from 2000 AD readers. And then basically when I then went on to post those commissions online, it would be like a kind of self-promotion, because, you know, if it's any good, then people spread it themselves. And, you know, I've also, I mean, the thing that many people can usually see when you look at new 2000 AD artists is who their influences are. And in my case, I think because I'm kind of inspired by the sort of artwork that was in the prog when I started reading it in the 90s, my style isn't really one of the kind of modern styles that you see in comics, and I am a big fan of those styles. Actually, to be honest, like, because I'm a big fan of like Jake Lynch and Danny, who drew DeMarco between Steve and me taking over. But that kind of, it can look like a very rough and sketch-like style, but it takes a great understanding of composition and such to make it work. And I just cannot draw in that style for the life of me. Like, I remember when I was on the illustration course I mentioned, we had this one course where we were practicing to draw in that sort of style. And the idea was that you'd take your sketchbook out and just draw loosely. But I'm just so OCD about all the details on the page that I just can't do that. Like, I remember my tutor telling me that it kind of defeats the point in drawing loosely if I've outlined it in pencil first. So I'm the type of person who will pencil rough sketches, you know. So, in terms of the self-promotion, it was just, you know, making sure that I've got a portfolio on site. And also, because me and Laura always kind of had a little bit of a giggle about this, because she said to me before that the 2000 AD Twitter account loves me because they're always retweeting the stuff that I put up and tag them in. And I said, well, the key is I'm always plugging stuff they sell as well when I'm doing it. So it'll be like, here's a fantastic drawing of Judge Fire. You can see Judge Fire in Dead World in 2000 AD, blah, blah, blah. It was just getting some traction on social media for me, really, and then sending that on to Fog and eventually a bit of new work came through.
Laura, what was your experience of the process?
Well, I was lucky when it came to the second thing I ever got published, because I got asked to do that, which I could not believe. Mm. But from then on, it's me soliciting pitches. And I kind of have the attitude that each time I almost expect Matt to be like, never email me again. Get the hell out of here. Like, it's kind of like, it's my attitude. Like, nothing is guaranteed. So
it's really terrifying waiting for an email back from Fog, I have to say.
Yes. Yeah. Or every time I send a pitch, I have to scream afterwards. I was saying this to Paul. I'll send it and I'll be like, because it's just nerve-wracking. Although as time has gone on, and so you do get responses when they're not quite, oh God, you do get responses when they're not quite right. And you just have to keep on trying, not to take it personally, to listen to the feedback, you know, to have your own opinion too, to come up with a compromise and, you know, be professional about it. Don't have a hard feeling if it's not working out. And if you get the work, then feel grateful. That's kind of my attitude towards it. I feel I've been very fortunate with the work that I've got. I think I must have been, maybe I've, has it been a year or 2 years now? I think it must be 2 years.
It's 2 years, yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, yes, 2 years. And I feel just, you know, really fortunate. And it's something, especially, it's something that I've always wanted to do, and you kind of can't believe it's happening, really. So, yeah, it's just feeling grateful and just hoping that you don't run out of stories to tell or something.
One thing I do want to ask about is, as I'm sure people who listened to the pitches 2 years ago at Thought Bubble, yours received one of the most visceral reactions I think I've ever heard, where the entire room went, "Oh!" And the previous DeMarco story that you did with Danny, that also had a bit of an "Oh!" moment. Is this your thing? Are you just out to sicken and shock us?
Well, to be honest, yes, but in a way, no. Like, that is my favourite thing to do, is to kind of sicken and make people wince or something, or have something extreme to happen. That DeMarco story that I wrote, that was based on this actual lady that, obviously, there wasn't like the kind of the dead body thing. But I was hired to do some surveillance of this woman's house because somebody was robbing her. And then when I turned up to her house, I was just like, so how are they getting in? What are they doing? This, that, this, that, this, that. And it turned out that they weren't just rubbing things, but they were moving things around the apartment, which then made me realize that, oh God, she's actually, the poor lady was suffering from dementia or something like that. So that was the kind of, and she was very similar to their character in that story, although she wasn't cutting up dead bodies. So that's kind of where that came from. This story, I do think the ending is extreme in a way, but I think it's maybe slightly different to, it's kind of just like a cool moment almost, or just something that I'm just kind of like, it just was really exciting to me to have the last part of the story, I think, is my favorite out of the three parts. And I'd say that the first two parts of the story are structured a way to make the payoff in the third one feel deserved or something, like earning my right to do something a bit, I wouldn't say gross, but definitely, in fact, I don't want to say anything. I'm not going to tell people. But yeah.
Yeah, and I would also say with Laura's history of doing these gross out endings, this is a kind of different script from what we've seen from her before, because she's been the only writer that I've worked with thus far with doing the Future Shock and stuff. I think it still has her, there's something recognisably in it that people who've read her previous stories will recognise. But, I don't think it's, I think she's showing more than she's just the shock endings when she writes stories. So I think that there is something different to it that people will get a similar kind of sort of reaction to,
What I also noticed, and this may be a spoiler for some people, is that this first episode features an appearance of a kebab shop, which I don't know. It's not something that's turned up in your work before, but I just feel like this is a very Laura Bailey thing to write.
Yeah, I remember reading somebody saying something about that. She keeps mentioning food in a lot of her comics, and I was like, oh yeah, you know what I do. But it, especially everybody in the office is obsessed with food. One of the PIs he was supposed to be on a diet and he was disappearing for hours at a time, and it turned out it was to get a fry up without anyone realizing.
I mean, that doesn't say an awful lot about the PIs that he worked with. That took a while to figure out.
We're like, where's he going? We thought, I don't know, it was maybe gambling or this or that. I don't know. Yeah, classic Ray. But it's just, food is a big part of it. People getting the food in, or getting food for free, all these things. So, you have to eat. Another thing that I almost wanted to put in, but I just don't think yet, is there's two things that are crucial. It's eating, and it's when you can go to the toilet. Sometimes you're in a car for God, however many hours at a time, and you're just bursting for the loo. Those, I think, are two, I reckon, unless I'm just working for crazy people, I think anyone who works in that industry would be this is what it's like. It's just worrying about when you can wee, and it's being hungry and grabbing something while you can or whatnot. But yeah, I've even messed up jobs before by having to do work in a restaurant and ordering too much food and messing up the whole kind of thing without going into too much details. So it's for a reason. It's not just but yeah, also the idea of Galen having a kebab I thought was quite funny. And Paul, I don't think, is a meat eater. So he was oh God, great.
Yeah, I sent her a kind of a slightly miffed message the day I was drawing an extreme close-up of kebab meat.
Brilliant. But one thing I did want to talk about was it's a subject that's come up quite a bit over the last year, and particularly this year when we've done the Tammy and Ginty special. We had the All Women Creators special last year, and that's 2080's female characters, and how they're portrayed, how often they appear, how, you know, the number of them, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to get both of your opinions on where Galen sits as a character within 2000AD's roster, because obviously, as we've already touched on, she her first story was dominated by not her first story, that was The Pit, but, you know, she was a character that came to be dominated by her relationship, or attempted relationship, with Judge Dredd, but she's gone on to have her own adventures. I just wanted to get your feelings on how Galen's been treated, how she fits into 2000 AD general as a female character.
Well, speaking in terms of depicting her for this story, because we were kind of going back and forth a little bit on which previous versions of her I would draw from for our iteration, and I think that, you know, we both do have a kind of similar era of DeMarco, which we both draw from for inspiration, and unfortunately it is the same era which featured her on the cover, you know, half naked basically more often than not. And it's not really, you know, that side of that over sexualization of her isn't something which I've had any interest in bringing into the strip. I know Laura isn't, I mean, there are certain stories which do draw from the sexual side of her, which, are pretty good. And, you know, we all have our urges and things like that. It's not like you can take sexuality completely out of the character and still have them be realistic. But I think it's just a matter of not wanting to feel like she's being drawn for male readers. You know, if there's something within the story that draws on the sexuality, then it will be because it strengthens her character in some way, or it develops her character in some way. What do you think, Laura?
I don't know whether people have a problem that her big story was kind of, or a defining part of her is her relationship with Joe Dredd. I personally, as I've said, I do like that story because I just see a lot of my female friends in, or even myself, in that kind of behaviour. You know, that stuff like that does happen. I wasn't too keen on her on the cover, and she kind of looks like cracked out, not even happy almost, with her boobs out. But on another level, you know, it is memorable. I don't mind sexualizing things so much, because I've had mates who are sex workers and whatnot, you know, it is part of life. But just if that's all there is, I mean, it's that, then that's all there is, you know. And if some people are into that, then fine, but that's personally not where I'd kind of want to go as a writer. In terms of her significance as a female character in 2000 AD's kind of catalogue, I didn't know how many people would be into her or not, but it sounds like that when Paul's been going to these cons, that there's, or online, that there's been a lot of interest in there being a new Galen story, and there is an appetite for her, which made me feel really pleased, to be honest, because I know I liked her, but, you know, who knows where she is in the minds of everybody else. I'm hoping that people who have enjoyed any Galen story will enjoy this one as well. I'd say it's almost a return back to her roots. So if you don't like that, then I don't know how you feel about this story.
Well, something that we did speak about as well when we were sort of planning how I was going to tackle to draw it was we both kind of felt that in modern era Galen tales, you know, mostly in the PI stuff, there hasn't really been an iconic moment that people can point to in the way that people went back to the relationship or her infatuation with Dredd. So, you know, there is an attempt to do something memorable within this one, which, Yeah, I guess we'll see if people do remember it. But we're both pleased with how it's turned out. And Galen is she's a really fun character to draw. I think she probably does edge it as far as my favourite female character goes, just because, you know, she was heavily featured in the prog when I started reading. Obviously, you have your Andersons and your Joram Red and stuff, but I find that particularly Laura's depiction of Galen in this new series, she has quite a few dimensions to her, which has been quite fun for me to get out on the page. Like, I think, you know, within part one, there's a definite split between you see her in work mode and you see her kind of on her own time, as if almost as if you know, you're kind of seeing her when she doesn't have any eyes on her, when she's just being her true self. And yeah, it's really fun to find those aspects of her personality and put them on the page. Mm.
She's always been one of those characters that I felt appeals because she's deeply flawed, and we've been, you know, we've been with her as she's made some absolutely clanging errors that have you know, completely changed her life, rather than it being a fully formed character who appears and, oh yes, I've got a dark past where I fell in love with a judge. We know what she's been through, and to a certain extent, that just makes her more interesting.
Yeah, that's how I feel about her. It's appealing to me, those kind of characters. Like, other female characters that I've really enjoyed, mainly ones that were in Ballad of Halo Jones. I specifically love this kind of niche one called Life Sentence. That was one of my favourite female characters, because again, it's the same sort of thing. It's these kind of hard edges.
Yeah.
Oh, I live for Life Sentence. I am obsessed. Even the name, it's just, it's just so exciting. But it's people not being perfect. Female characters can suffer from that, but, you know, you can have bloke characters that are like that too. I just personally prefer people who are getting things wrong, just because I don't know anybody who gets things right all the time, you know. And if they are, they're probably insufferable.
Brilliant. I think that's the perfect place to wrap up. Thanks so much for taking the time to have a chat, and I'll see you by soon.
Have a good time in San Diego.
I will do.
Yes.
All right,
then, take guys.
Care.
All right. See you in a bit.
Bye. Yeah. See you, Laura.
Bye. Bye.
Well, thank you as always to Laura and Paul for coming on the podcast to chat a little bit about DeMarco PI. Lovely to hear from them as always. And great that we've got some new talent coming through the ranks, getting multi-part stories in 2000 AD and the Meg. We will be back in 2 weeks' time when the droids undoubtedly frazzled, exhausted, and probably not a little bit sunburned from their time in San Diego. We'll be heading back. Like I said, hopefully bring you a bit of the flavour, interviews with a few of the guests, and some of the panels that we've got going on over there. And until then, splendid birthrig, Earthlets.
Alert! 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 Fell power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.